It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1.
Happy Thursday and welcome into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown and Daniel Shirley with you for the next 2 hours. A couple of guests on the rundown today. Three guests on the rundown today. Coming up at 11:30, we'll talk Georgia Tech football with Bryce Coon. He's with the Crowded Booth podcast. And then coming up at 12:15, it's Frank Sulkowski with WJCL down in Savannah. We'll talk a little Georgia Southern football with him. And David Hill of ESPN.com jumps in here at 12:30. And we'll talk about the college football playoff expansion and the championship games that are coming up this weekend. And we'll start there with the college football playoff expansion. The Rose Bowl finally got off their keister and agreed to be a participant and be a little bit flexible with their game. And that's going to pave the way for college football playoff expansion in 2024. This is going to be huge for the sport. And all you have to do is look at this season. You know, in the conversations that we've already had about who should be in the Final Four, how things are going to play out this weekend, and any sort of, I guess, drama, if you will, is, a college football playoff solves that. And then the other part of it, too, is you look at all the championship games coming up this weekend, and, of course, the Pac-12 with USC has playoff implications. The Big 12 with TCU has playoff implications. The Big Ten does not. The SEC does not. The ACC does not. The American does not. Let's not forget about them. Because in a 12-team playoff, all four of those games, in some shape, fashion, or form, would have playoff implications.
Yeah, it's... I know people are saying, oh, these games don't mean anything this week, but isn't it about this much every year? It doesn't seem like there's that much less this year.
Not really.
I mean, of the 10 championship games, four of them have playoff implications? That seems about right. It's not. Well, sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less, but it's not like it's like none of these games matter. There are some games that matter.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in a vacuum, a chance to win a conference championship, that always matters.
Sure.
But as far as the Final Four is concerned, that's the part, that's the drama that's left out, you know. And really, if USC and TCU win their games, think about this. So from a TV standpoint, you've got the Pac-12 championship game coming up Friday night. Right out of the gate at noon is the Big 12 championship. If Kansas State and TCU wins those games, you've still got LSU, Georgia, UCF, Tulane, Purdue, Michigan, Clemson, North Carolina. You've got the Sun Belt championship game as well. And you already know who's in the playoffs.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, if you're an LSU or a Georgia fan, if you're a fan of, you know, UCF or Tulane, or if you're a fan of Purdue or Michigan, Clemson, North Carolina, yeah, there's a lot of excitement. Fresno State, Boise State, there's a lot of excitement for your game to be able to win a conference championship. There's no question about that. But if you're just a casual college football fan, right. Outside of just loving the game.
Loving to watch college football.
I mean, I can't wait to watch Georgia and LSU at 4 o'clock. But, you know, as far as the national championship implications, it's just not there.
Right.
You know, and then the other part of it, too, is when we start to have these conversations about, well, what happens if TCU and USC lose? Well, what would happen is they lose their first-round bye in a 12-team playoff. They would still be in.
Right.
The Alabama-Tennessee conversations we have. Well, Tennessee beat Alabama. Well, their quarterback's hurt. Well, Alabama would beat them now if they had a rematch, or if it was on a neutral field. That game was in Knoxville. You know, all those kind of, that goes out the window. You don't have that conversation anymore. I heard one of the guys on Dan Patrick this morning say this. You know, Penn State's 10-2. They're ranked 8th in the country. Nobody talks about Penn State.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, they're in the conversation. Clemson's in the conversation.
They would be in it. Penn State would be in.
Yeah, Penn State would be in really, because they don't play this weekend,
right?
So they would be in really good shape, you know. Clemson would still have to beat North Carolina. You know, Kansas State would have to beat TCU. And LSU would still have a shot, you know, if they beat Georgia, of being in the college football playoff. So there would just be a lot more. It's going to bring a lot more meaningful football to the stretch run in this sport, and it's going to be so much better. If you think about, you know, what it was before the BCS, and then people fought against the BCS, and they got the BCS, and it was a little bit better. It wasn't perfect. You still had teams left out. You still had split championships. You know, and there was pushback against going to a 4-team playoff. But look at what it's done for the sport and how much more entertaining it's been.
Yeah.
And you get to a 12-team playoff, it's going to be the same thing.
I still see people complaining about, oh, it's going to kill the regular season. I just don't get – do we say that about the NFL? The NFL's not dead because there's a real playoff. I think people are looking at this wrong.
Well, it's 12 out of 131 teams.
Right. It's still less than 10% of the teams in college football are going to be in the playoff. Now, do they want to go – 12's fine. I don't want to go to 24. I don't want to go to 16.
Sure.
Leave it at 12, and we'll right. be good.
Well, if you go back, and we can go through this, and we'll just look at the top 25 games from this past week. On Thursday night, you had Mississippi State and Ole Miss. It was a great game. No playoff implication.
Right.
Florida State, great game. No playoff implication. With a expanded field, Florida State would have still been, you know, trying to keep their hopes alive. NC State, North Carolina, the same thing. North Carolina would need to win that game to have a shot at the playoffs in case they lose to Clemson, and they did not win that game. UCLA, California, same thing. Tulane, Cincinnati, same thing. Baylor, Texas. I think Texas was too far back.
Right.
Georgia, Georgia Tech is the same. Michigan, Ohio State would be the same. TCU, Iowa State would be the same. LSU, Texas A&M. LSU falls out of playoff contention without a win over Georgia because of that loss. Notre Dame, USC. Alabama, Auburn. Clemson, South Carolina. Oregon, Oregon State. Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Penn State, Michigan State. Kansas State, Kansas, because Kansas State's trying to get to the Big 12 championship game. Washington, Washington State. The Huskies are ranked 13th going into that game. Utah, Colorado. Utah's 14th. Now they're going to be able to play in the Pac-12 title because they won that game. Central Florida's probably too far back. Louisville's probably too far back. So out of all those games, I think three or four would be unaffected because of a 12-team playoff. But how many of those games now all of a sudden carry a lot more weight because of a 12-team playoff versus didn't carry any weight?
At all. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at Utah. Utah's the perfect example of what a team that they won that game. If they win this week, they're in. And then you're probably, you know, we do it in the NCAA tournament. Nobody wants to play the hot team. Who's that hot team that nobody wants to play? Could have been Utah. Now, you know, and look, it's coming. We know it's coming with the news that was announced yesterday. The only bad thing about it, the expansion, is it's not happening this month. I wish it was 12 right now. But, I mean, this is going to be a great thing for college football. And then, Russ, if they play these first-round games on campus, it's going to be a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking, you know, going back through and looking at this, if in the current format, last week there were four games that had playoff implications versus 15 in the top 25.
Right.
The Notre Dame USC game has implications either way, because even at 15, Notre Dame could have still played their way in. But the ones that weren't relevant, we'll say it that way, Michigan State, Ohio State, Georgia, Georgia Tech, those are the ones that would carry the meaning. So you're talking about the number one team in the country. You know, granted, they're playing an in-state rival, but nobody expected that game to be close, right? Right. Now Michigan, Ohio State's a completely different story. But it just it brings more excitement, more meaningful football. And then we get into these hypothetical discussions that can be frustrating, because there are some of us that, you know, think, you know, when the game should matter, when a game is played and one team beats another team, that should matter. There are others that think, no, it's how you're playing right now. And then you get into all these hypotheticals and there's nothing concrete about anything. It's just all opinion. All of that goes out the window now.
Yeah.
Because your debate, and people have said, well, you're just still going to have the same debate between 12 and 13. No, you're not. You're getting into 2 and 3 lost teams. Nobody's going to say, you know, if you know, the University of Washington gets left out of a 12-team playoff, that, well, they could have won the national championship. Nobody's saying that.
Nobody's saying that.
Whereas this year, you know, this year's a little bit different because it does feel like it's Georgia, and there's about six or seven teams it could be in. But all of the, you know, like, you don't feel like Ohio State, for example, if Ohio State doesn't make it into the college football playoff, boy, that's a team out there. Boy, how would they have matched up against Georgia? I would have liked to see that receiving corps go against the University of Georgia. Like, those teams don't get left out anymore.
Right.
And that's the important part.
It is. It is. Absolutely.
And the opt-outs that you see in these bowl games, that goes away. You know, there's going to be meaning to these, you know, the New Year's Six, for example. I don't know if they'll still call it that, but that's where a lot of the second-round games are going to be played. So you're not going to see, you know, 42,000 people in the Louisiana Superdome for the Sugar Bowl anymore. It'll be back to 70. And it's just going to bring a lot of fun and excitement back into the sport that we all love so much.
I don't know any negative to it, like I said, other than, you know, my joke about it not happening this week or next week. But, I mean, now it's official. I mean, the CFP came out and put out a statement that it's coming in 2024. So, I mean, this is a great thing. And, you know, now we still got to get through next year. But then after that, we're going to have a 12-team playoff in college football. And, you know, what's the format going to be? When's it going to start? Is it going to start the weekend after the conference championship games? And we don't have that buffer till the bowls start? What's going to happen to the bowls? All that's got to get figured out.
You'll still have the bowl games and all that stuff. You know, it'll just be kind of filler, if you will, in the in-between time. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little basketball, the Hawks and UGA in action last night. Then we'll open. Bryce Kuhn joins us at 11:30, and then we'll open it up for your phone calls. Back with more of the Midday Sports Zone right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
Eleven 16, Russ and Daniel back with you here on the Midday Sports Zone. So the Bulldogs basketball team off to a 6-2 start. They won again last night. They beat Hampton 73-54 was the final score in the game. And I think notably in this, Georgia was without one of their leading scorers as Cairo Aquindo, and I hope I'm saying the name correctly, Cario maybe, did not play. He averages 13.7 points a game. That's number two right behind Terry Roberts, who averages 14. So they were without their leading scorer. Braylon Bridges led the team last night with 21. He's been averaging 5.6, so a big game for him. But, yeah, and it's Hampton. I know. It's Hampton. You know, it's not – well, I was going to say North Carolina, but they've lost three in a row. But you know, they beat the team handily. They beat them by 19 points. You know, you could say the same thing about their last win over East Tennessee State. It was a 62-47 win, so a 15-point victory there. They'll play Florida A&M on Friday night at 7 o'clock. And then next Tuesday on the 6th, it's Georgia Tech at McCamish Pavilion. So, yeah, I'll say what I've said all along. I'm really curious to see what happens when they get into – conference play. And look, they'll play Georgia Tech on the 6th, and then of course you get the break for exams. They still take those, right? And
yes.
Then you'll get,
yes,
Notre Dame on the 18th. Chattanooga's been a good program of late. They'll play them on the 21st, and they'll open up conference play against the Auburn Tigers on January the 4th. So, you know, they've got some games coming up on the schedule that are probably going to be a little bit more of a litmus test. But if you consider where this team's coming from and how bad it was last year, this is a phenomenal start for UGA.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And you just love what you're seeing, you know, from this team and how they're playing, I think, is the biggest thing. Like you said, they're playing teams that they should beat. And what are they doing? They're beating them bad. You know, they're beating them in games that they're in control. And that's what you want to see, you know, from these kinds of games. You don't want to make too much out of these kinds of games, because they are games they should win, but they are winning them, and they're winning them easily. or handily, however you want to say it. Maybe not easy. I think the coaches might say that it's not easy, but they are winning these games in a fashion that they should win them in. And I think that's a big step forward for this program.
Yep.
This program has been a disaster for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it really has. And again, they'll take on Florida A&M on Friday. Before we get to the Hawks, I'll just kind of interrupt what we were doing here, because the college football playoff entity itself has put out the official release now about the playoff expansion. And there are some details in here that I think are interesting. And this is part of the statement they just released about 5 minutes ago. The first round of the playoff in 2024 will take place the week ending Saturday, December 21st, at either the home field of the higher seed team or at another site designated by the higher seeded institution. So I guess that means you don't have to play on campus.
You don't have to. Right.
All right. So 12 at 5, 11 at 6, 10 at 7, 9 at 8. The specific game dates, likely late in that week, will be announced later. We'll get back to that in just a sec. For the 24 and 25 seasons, the four quarterfinal games and two playoff semifinal games will be played in bowl games on a rotating basis. The 2024 quarterfinals will take place in the Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl, while the Cotton Bowl and Orange Bowl will host the playoff semifinals. The 2025 quarterfinals will take place in the Cotton Bowl, Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl, while the Fiesta Bowl and Peach Bowl will host the playoff semifinals. Specific dates for all quarterfinal and semifinal games will be announced at a later time. The national championship games play January 20th, 2025 in Atlanta, and January 19, 2026 in Miami. And then there's a lot of quotes and handshakes and pats on the back that follow that. So there you go. The week ending on December 21st, there was some wondering if it would change the schedule, meaning would these rivalry games be moved up a little bit? And I don't think that's going to be the case. And I'm trying to skip ahead on my calendar here to December 2024. Yeah, so you could play the championship games on December 7th, which would be the first Saturday in December, and keep those rivalry games right where they're at the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And then all teams would have a week off before the 21st. And then, of course, if you have the first round bye, you would have the 2 weeks off to the 28th. And the other interesting aspect about this I noticed it said at a later date. They've got to figure out how they want to go up against the NFL. That's another interesting component of this, because I don't think the NFL is going to give those Saturday games back.
They're not, and I'm disappointed that it sounds like these games are not going to always be on campus, the quarterfinal games. As you were saying there, it sounds like they're going to start putting those in bowl games. I'm not a huge fan of that.
Well, it said it was up to the higher-seeded team.
Right.
So if you want to play on campus, you can.
But you said, didn't you say in 25 they were going to the quarterfinals?
No, the
were going
quarterfinals
to
are going to be in bowl games.
Oh, the quarterfinals. That's right. Okay.
Not the first round.
The first round will still be on campus.
On campus, yeah.
Okay, that's a good thing. I misheard you there. So the NFL, we've seen these sports try to stay away from the NFL as much as possible. Golf is doing it. NASCAR's doing it. I wish the NBA would do it. It hasn't. Baseball does it. When they're in the playoffs, those games are typically played during the week and not Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be interesting how that works out, because I don't think the NFL is just going to say, okay, yeah, we'll work with you and, we'll play these games. No, the NFL is going to do what the NFL does, and you better find a way to work around that.
Yeah. Well, maybe they can find a window to put it in that wouldn't go head to head. You're probably going to see Friday night games, which stinks for the high school kids. But
the high schools are probably done by then, right? I mean,
December, yeah.
Most high schools are done by then.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So yeah, you'll probably see a lot of Friday night games and stuff like that. But we've got one more year of the four team, and then we'll get to the get to the 12 team playoff. Oh, it's going to be epic.
Fast forward. Let's just hit the fast forward button.
All right, let's get back into the basketball now. The Hawks won last night. And as big as a win can be on November the 30th, that was a big win for the Atlanta Hawks. It stopped a three-game losing streak. And, listening to the comments from both coaches going into that matchup, Orlando came in on a six-game losing streak. I mean, that was I don't want to say playoff atmosphere, but there was a lot of oomph in that game on both sides. They wanted it real bad. And the Hawks played really well. Trae Young, DeJounte Murray led the team. Trae had 30. DeJounte had 27. Trae also had 14 assists. Clint Capela had 20 points. Now, Hunter and Collins only combined for 8 points. DeAndre Hunter had some thigh tightness and only played 7 minutes. John Collins sprained his ankle when he dunked a basketball right before the half and did not play in the second half. So, a couple of injuries now to some key players here in Collins and Hunter. And, of course, Collins has been in trade rumors talk, so I don't know how that would affect that. But, you know, some injuries here to keep an eye on to the starting five for these Atlanta Hawks. But all in all, Daniel, 125 to 108, that was a big win for them.
It was. And, you know, look, Orlando's not one of the best teams in the NBA, but we've talked about the NBA. You just got to win games. And you can't have long losing streaks. And, you know, so to get a win is a win is a win is a win in the NBA. I don't care who you play. I don't care who you beat. You know, it's a long season and you just need to win games. And they got that done last night.
Yep.
And I thought they looked a lot more efficient and a lot cleaner than they've looked, especially this three-game losing streak, yeah, for sure.
Well, and the players, you know, they knew how badly they needed to snap that too. So, and that's good because how many times have we seen the Hawks in a game like this against a team that's 5-16 going in? And they just kind of roll the ball out and say, we're the Atlanta Hawks.
And then they lose.
And then they lose.
Right.
Right. Franz Wagner led the Magic with 22. And Pablo Banchero, the rookie out of Duke, that's having a phenomenal season. Phenomenal rookie year. He had 20 points for Orlando. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Bryce Kuhn of the Crowded Booth podcast will join us. We'll talk Georgia Tech football with him. That and more as we continue on the Midday Sports Zone right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
.com 11:30, Russ and Daniel back with you here, Midday Sports Zone. Let's talk a little Georgia Tech football now. The Yellow Jackets have their new head coach. It's Brent Key. They removed the interim tag on Tuesday afternoon and talk more about that. Let's welcome in Bryce Kuhn from the Crowded Booth podcast. Good morning, Bryce. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. I think the last 2 nights I've actually got to go to sleep and not have to stay up and wait for coaching rumors and the way this thing has just transpired over the past 72 to 96 hours.
Yeah, that escalated quickly, as they say. well, just your overall thoughts on Brent Key and that hire for Georgia Tech now that we know he's officially the head coach.
Look, I mean, I don't think you can deny the body of work that he was able to put forward, especially with just kind of the mess they were in. The way the kids responded to it, that means a lot. Obviously, the Georgia Tech brass felt that it meant a lot, and I think it should. I mean, the players love him. I think the fans are excited about it, and really and truly you can't deny, especially after the game against Georgia last weekend.
I think we lost Bryce there.
I think we lost Bryce, yeah. It's interesting how this played out with him, you know, getting the job. And you know, there were a lot of people, there were talks of other coaches. You know, I don't know if he was the first choice or second choice or the third choice or, you know, however that played out. But he could be the right choice. And look, you can't make a definitive statement about whether or not he was the right choice. That'll all play out on the field. I mean, it feels like the right choice or the right fit. It feels like, you know, that this is going to be a good situation for him, and it feels like it's going to be a good situation for the team and the fan base and all those things. But, you know, now we got to find out once they start playing games.
That's it. We got Bryce back with us now. Bryce, you were saying about Brent Key.
Sorry, I guess I lost it there. No, but going back to Key, I mean, I think, like we were talking about, you know, you can't deny the body of work that he was able to do with, you know, limited opportunity, limited resources. And I think, too, the Georgia game, look, I mean, nobody believes, and even Key will tell you, he doesn't believe in moral victories. But I think the game against Georgia was as close to a moral victory as you could have, especially where this program's been the past couple of years, to be able to go to Athens, compete, and really, truly, and Georgia fans will tell you this, put a little bit of a scare, especially on that first drive, and make things a little too close for comfort. Look, it's a lot more than what a lot of people could say, over the past 3 years, and so why not try to ride out that momentum? And, you know, due to the terms of the contract and the length, you're not making a massive financial commitment to this where if it does not go well, you're not handicapping yourself like you did with the last coach.
Bryce, we've heard a little bit about the coaching staff. It sounds like the defensive staff is going to stay, but there's going to be some changes on offense.
Yeah, obviously, defensively, you know, you could really make the case, guys, that it makes sense for them to keep, you know, that staff, to keep it rolling in the sense of, I'm sorry, as soon as I step outside, I've got an ambulance passing me. Gotta love it. But no, look, you have to admire what the defense did this year. If the offense would have just been an ounce better, this defense really could have been even better. They wouldn't have been on the field as long. Offensively, they're keeping Chris Winkie. Chip Long was let go of the offensive coordinator. You let go of a couple of others, and you're able to, you know, kind of overhaul that. And I think that's going to be where they have to find their identity. And they've got to be able to say, okay, now we're going to play a tough physical brand of football. Key's going to be able to lean on Chris Winkie and his network of folks, be able to lean on, you know, a multitude of others to be able to try to make a decision what's going forward. But, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is offensively, if you can keep a quarterback healthy and do some things, maybe next year, you know, a bowl game's not out of the question.
We're just glad the ambulance isn't coming for you, Bryce. Bryce Coon of the Crowded Booth Podcast, our guest here on the program. You mentioned what a crazy week it had been. You know, Sunday night it was really loud, and it sounded like Willie Fritz was going to be the guy at Georgia Tech, and then by Tuesday afternoon, of course, it was Brent Key. Can you just kind of take us through that time period and what happened, and how did we get from Willie Fritz to Brent Key?
Yeah, no, of course. I think, you know, first, we may need to start it Thursday or Friday. So I'll give you a tidbit there. Thursday or Friday, and I got let you guys know this. I mean, you know, it felt like Jamie Chadwell was the guy. And now learning from folks close to Jamie Chadwell, when he was told that he could not bring his entire offensive staff over, he decided to pull himself out of the race. And, look, I get that. Much respect. When you run a niche offense like Chadwell does, you've got to – you point to where you had success, and it's with those guys. If he felt like he needed to do that, that makes sense. Tech wanted to keep certain people in tow. And then you move over to the Bill O'Brien, which was much more, I think, Alabama fans not wanting him anymore and trying to push him onto somebody else. And then the Fritz situation, which I'll tell you this, if part of it is from yours truly, if it doesn't leak on Sunday night, I think that Fritz might be your head coach because – from what we're learning more, Willie was not too happy with how the system and how everything leaked out before his Tulane team played in the American Conference title game this upcoming Saturday. Look, when you're a Group of Five head coach, nobody, you know, you don't want rumblings getting out before your group gets to play one of the bigger games in program history for them. And I get that. So he wasn't too happy with it, decided to pull his name away, and he kind of left Jay Batt with, you know, what was right there in his face the entire time, a large chunk, if not the entire donor base, was really pushing them to make this hire. So I'll say this, and I talked with a coach, a former coach the other day, who really kind of put in perspective for me, and I'll offer this to you. I think it's obvious to say that, you know, Brent Key was not option number one. He was not option A. He wasn't really B either. But if you look across the country and you go back to a bunch of different coaching searches, sometimes A and B and C, you know, you look back and say, man, I'm glad it didn't work out. I'm glad it went with option C or D. And I think that's what Georgia Tech's hoping here, that happens, that, you know, the right answer is in front of them the entire time, and they were able to luck out, and they'll look back and say, hey, we made the right decision.
Bryce, you talked about quarterback for a minute there. Is next year's quarterback on the roster right now, or do they have to go into the portal and get somebody or in recruiting?
Yeah, no, well, you know, the biggest thing recruiting-wise is there's not currently a quarterback committed.
Right.
And out of the high school ranks. That is a big question mark. How does Winkie and the staff handle that? You know, I think a lot of it, guys, depends on how does Zach Pyron heal and rehab? Can you realistically say we're going to put that guy in as a starter? Because truth be told, guys, that kid played well above his expectations when he was in football games. This is the kid that was running a scout team a month and a half ago. I think they're going to go in the portal. You know, Jeff Sims in the portal. He's leaving. You know, we could see Zach Gibson or Tyson Pumachon leave. You know, I think Pyron's going to be on that roster and definitely should be in the mix for the starting job. It's just how healthy is he? you know, with that injury and having to heal and rehab. Also, you got to remember, guys, kid's still super, super young. You know, would it benefit? And what I think is going to be a portal that's filled with a lot of quality quarterbacks, and especially some, you know, grad transfers and come in for 1 year, let Pyron sit and learn, and really, you know, take an opportunity and give him some real competition. But I think they're going to look to the portal and kind of see when it opens up on December the 5th officially. You know, we may have a better gauge of that next Thursday when we talk about where they're going to go in that direction.
Bryce, do we know, like, the defense, like you said, they're going to run it back, right? We know what that scheme will look like. Do we know what kind of scheme Brent wants to run on offense, or will that be depending on who he hires as the OC?
I think it'll depend, but, look, I think also key, being the blue-collar offensive lineman that he is, I think you're going to see physical. I'll say this. I don't expect a Mike Leach-type air raid offense to come in. I don't exactly expect – you know, something like that. But I think that you will see a physical brand of football, something in between maybe a pro style and a spread that plays to the strengths of what you can realistically recruit at Georgia Tech. I think Key has a really good grasp of that, where Collins and Dave Patino kind of tried to fit that square peg into a round hole for a couple of years. I think, you know, Key's going to be able to play to the strengths, which is what he did multiple times throughout the 8 games that he was interim head coach.
Good stuff. Bryce Coon of the Crowded Booth Podcast has been our guest. Always appreciate the time, man. Take care.
Yes, y'all have a good one.
Thanks, bud.
All right, we'll do it. Good stuff there. Some insight. And you know what Bryce was saying about, okay, maybe this is your number two or number three choice. Josh Heupel comes to mind. And, of course, the all-timer. We all know who Alabama wanted over Nick Saban.
Right.
Rich Rodriguez.
Right.
So, even though you don't get your first choice, so to speak, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, I mean, you know, look at for me, as I don't think a lot of people wanted Dabo Swinney as the first choice when that happened. Now, when they beat South Carolina, that kind of changed things that year, but I don't think he was the first choice. There were a lot of people wanted Gary Patterson or Will Muschamp, or, you know, thank God that didn't happen. But you're right about Nick Saban. Nick Saban was not going to be Alabama's coach. It was supposed to be Rich Rodriguez. And think about how life would be different if that had happened. You don't know what Rich Rodriguez would have done, but I know he wouldn't have done this.
No, where does Saban end up? Yeah, that's right, the exactly. The question I have.
Because he was leaving the Dolphins. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Maybe not that year, but
yeah,
certainly by the next one. No, and I mean, Greg Schiano, I just feel like if he was the head coach at Tennessee right now, they would not be ranked 7th in the country.
Right.
I mean, that Josh Heupel offense is gotten Tennessee to where they're at. So we'll see what happens. And then hearing that about, you know, an offensive style, Brent Key's an offensive lineman, of course. And when he was at Georgia Tech, it was Ralph Regan's offense. It was a very, I don't want to say pro style, but, you know, as pro style as a college offense can be, sort of attack. I mean, I'm not saying he's bringing Ralph Regan back by any stretch or anything like that. But, you know, obviously he's got his ideas of what he wants his offense to look like.
It's going to be fun to watch. And we say it all the time. You don't have to do what everybody else does. Do it differently. I know David Shaw just left Stanford, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't try to become something else.
Play to your strengths.
They played with two tight ends, and it worked for a long time.
Play to your strengths.
That's right.
You know, and you know, you may be limited or, you know, you may not be able to do it the way most people want to do it or say you're supposed to do it. But that being said, there is opportunity, and you do have strengths, and you play to those strengths.
We have talked about it for since Paul left. Georgia Tech cannot out-recruit Georgia and Clemson and Alabama and maybe even Tennessee, maybe even Auburn in their backyard, or they never have, not when those teams are at where they are now. And look at where those teams are now. Georgia's the best. Alabama's Alabama. Now Tennessee's rocking and rolling. Auburn's got a new coach coming in. Clemson's still pretty damn good. And now you got to deal with all that right around within 2 hours of your campus.
Yeah.
If you're Georgia Tech. So try to do it a little bit differently.
Yep.
And that's what, to me, and Bryce said that, it felt like Jeff Collins was trying to do what everybody else was doing. And they can't do that and win. They can't.
Now, I don't know what Jeff Collins was trying.
Well,
at least off the field, he was trying what nobody else was trying.
Yeah. The weight benches is on the field were an issue.
Yeah, that's all in the past now. All right, we're going to take a break.
We don't have to talk about him anymore. That's our last comment about Jeff Collins.
I doubt it, but yeah, we'll try. Phone lines are open, 478-646-ESPN. Wherever you want to go in the world of sports is fine with us, and we're back with more of the Midday Sports Zone right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
/11:47, Russ and Daniel back with you. Phone lines open, 478-646-ESPN, wherever you want to go in the world of sports. It's fine with us. I just saw this from Ross Dellinger with Sports Illustrated. A really good follow if you're a college football fan and you don't already. He says, if a 12-team playoff existed now, this is what you'd be looking at this week. Tulane and Central Florida, the winner is in, the loser is out. North Carolina with a win would be in. So the Clemson-North Carolina game is basically win or go home. Kansas State, Utah, and LSU could qualify with wins and possibly even get byes depending on how things worked out. And, of course, Ohio State, Alabama, and Tennessee are sitting at home just waiting to see if they're going to host or be on the road for the first week of the college football playoff. And that's kind of what we've been talking about with this weekend's games. But, again, I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying. You know, conference championship games have meaning. Meaning you're winning your conference championship is a big deal. But as far as the college football playoff is concerned, these games don't have any meaning towards that. They don't matter as far as that's concerned.
Well, and that goes away when this changes. I mean, these games are going to matter. So, and look, I mean, you know, I have a lot of people the last, 4 days since Saturday when Clemson lost. Well, now the ACC championship doesn't matter. What does matter? I mean, if you're playing that game and you get a, I mean, you win a conference title as a college football player, you know, it will matter. Now, does it matter as far as the playoff this week? No, because the winner's not going. But if you win this game, you get to go to the Orange Bowl as opposed to going to the Cheez-It Bowl. And nothing against the Cheez-It Bowl. I went last year and had a blast.
Yeah, bowl games are fun.
It's the Cheez-It Bowl versus the Orange Bowl. There's a difference. I love Cheez-Its. Ate a bunch of them at the game. That goofy Cheez-It mascot, the king or whatever he was calling himself. It was fine. But, you know, we went to that game, and Laura had been to one bowl game in her life, and it was the national championship game in New Orleans. And we went to that game last year in Orlando, and the top deck of the Orlando Stadium is blocked off. And she was like, where are the rest of the people? Because she's used to going to games at Clemson or going to games at Georgia and the stadium's full. Or going to the national championship game and the stadium's full. So there's a difference between going to the Cheez-It Bowl and going to the Orange Bowl. And if you win this game Saturday, you get to go to the Orange Bowl. You know, the Tulane game. If Tulane wins, they're going to a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that game doesn't mean anything.
It has meaning. It just doesn't have playoff implications. Playoff implications. All right, let's get to the phones. 478-646-ESPN. Ken is incoming. What's up, man?
Merry Christmas, gentlemen.
Merry Christmas.
It's here, baby.
It's December, yeah.
There you go. So, you know, another thing that I wanted to kind of quickly interject when I had a lucid moment was that, you know, one of the biggest things that you would be playing for right now is a bye. Because look at Tennessee.
Sure.
Tennessee would probably be, you know, continuing on, but you're going to have to do it with your backup quarterback. Now, if they had a bye, I'm not saying Josh Heupel would be back. I don't think we know that. But my point is that week of rest is going to be significant because, as it is right now, what do we get, like 4 or 5 weeks so guys can get ready for the playoff stretch. Now, that's not going to be the case. You got to go into it with whatever you got. And that's going to have implications when this whole thing starts going. So, just something I thought I'd throw out there, like I said. And I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Ken. So, Ken's right. I mean, those buys, you think those buys don't matter. That's going to be a big part of this because you want to have a buy or you want to be at home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a huge part of you know, this going forward.
Yep. All right, let's get to another phone call here, 478-646-ESPN. Kirkland is in Macon. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on today, Russ and Daniel?
How you doing?
What's up, bud?
Hey, doing great, man. I just want to call. I know we're talking about a lot of football and stuff, but SEC had a couple key wins the other week, last few days. Do you think the SEC is finally becoming a power conference in basketball and might be a player here soon? Yep. As a whole.
Say that again?
The SEC conference as a whole in basketball had a few key wins the last few days.
Oh, yeah.
Power teams, and you think they might be becoming a player here, a powerhouse.
Yo, no, I think the SEC in basketball has been a player for the last few years. I don't think – I mean, you look at – Auburn and Tennessee, Alabama's had some good years. I mean, obviously Kentucky, but
Kentucky
no,
is Kentucky.
I think the SEC's been. I mean, you know, going back 10 years ago, not so much, but I think in the last 4 or 5 years, LSU. I think SEC basketball has been a player already. I don't think they're becoming one, Kirkland. I think they are.
Oh, you think they're already there?
Oh, I mean, yeah,
they've got some big wins in the last few days.
Yeah,
and you know, I got to stay loyal to my Georgia Bulldogs. I love them just as much as I love the football team. I love the basketball team just as much.
Yeah, and now they're looking good too so far. 6-2, big win last night. Your boy didn't even play last night, and they still whooped up on Hampton.
Hey, it's a new day in Georgia. Hey, but hey, and one thing I want to know before I leave, I wanted to ask before I leave, and I want to ask Daniel, is Dabo Swinney not replaceable?
Everybody's replaceable. I mean, everybody. I mean, somebody's going to have to replace him. Somebody's going to have to replace Nick Saban, right? No, he's not irreplaceable. Now, can the next person do what he's done? Very doubtful. Very doubtful. But, I mean, they're going to, yeah, I mean, eventually he's not going to be the head coach anymore, so they better be able to replace him or they're going to be in some trouble.
And Kirkland's gone.
We lost like Kirkland. Poof.
Kirkland's irreplaceable.
Kirkland is irreplaceable.
But no, you're right. I had a teacher in high school, and that was he would tell us that at least once a week. Nobody's irreplaceable.
Yep.
And I think that's a great, valuable thing to know as you navigate the waters of life. We're all irreplaceable.
They will find somebody else.
Yeah.
To do what you're doing.
No doubt about it.
I mean, as I've left newspapers and gone to other jobs, they hired, well, the Telegraph didn't, but the other places hired a sports editor after I left.
We could do a whole show on that.
Well, it ain't the Telegraph's fault. I'm not blaming the Telegraph. It's that company that owns them. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, everybody, there is a next person for every job.
Yep. 478-646-ESPN. We'd love to hear from you. More of the Midday Sports Zone as we roll along into hour number two.
It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1.
Hour number two of the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown and Daniel Shirley with you. Got a couple guests coming up this hour. Frank Sokowski, the big guy from WJCL in Savannah. We'll talk some Georgia Southern football with us at 12:15. And then coming up at 12:30, it's David Hale from ESPN.com. And I just realized David sent his request for return music.
Yeah.
I don't think we have it.
Oh, no.
Because Chris is sick.
Oh.
And old Russ might have dropped the ball there.
Oh.
What was the song?
Yeah, I think you did drop the ball. What was the song? Well, hold on, let me scroll through.
We may already have it.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong David. I got like 9 Davids in my phone. Even the Losers?
Tom Petty. Okay.
Yeah. We got time.
We can make something happen.
You got about 30 minutes to look.
We'll figure. I'm kind of busy. But, yeah, we'll see if we can figure something out.
Well, David's going to be upset. You know, he's a little high maintenance.
Well, you know, I'm kind of clutch, so
he
maybe.
He gets upset with you guys when you guys drop the ball on him.
Yeah. Well, I'm clutch.
And he blames it on me, by the way.
Well, that's fine. That's probably why I'm not worried about it. Because I know it's I won't get blamed for it.
See the texts I get, the names he calls me when we don't have his music.
No, we'll make something happen.
Okay.
Here. Well, I've got a few ideas floating around in the head. All right, let's get back to the phones now. 478-646-ESPN. Let's go to Josh in Savannah. Hey, Josh.
What's up, bro? Daniel, how y'all doing today?
Good, man. How are you? Doing well.
Doing good, man. Beautiful day out today. Nice temps, a lot of sunshine, beautiful day. Just wanted to touch up. All this Georgia Tech talk you guys are doing, man, it's kind of making me nauseous. I just kind of have a hard time listening without getting sick to my stomach.
Well, that's what the open phone time is for. So then you can call in and, you know, send things in a different direction.
Well, there's a reason. See, you know, it's kind of talking about...
We lost you for a sec, Josh. Say that again.
I said, I told you about my bad decision in Georgia Southern leaving the game early. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, the thing about Georgia Tech, see, I was in middle school and going into high school when Tech rattled off three in a row in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And the Jasper Saints non-fumble, that was called a fumble. And I don't know, you know, depending on how big of a small town, because I think in South Georgia, everybody's from a small town, right? But some small towns are bigger than other small towns.
Okay, yeah, yep.
But when you play sports and live in a small town, sometimes you can have a rival, right? You got a rival in school, a rival. You know, you got friends and you got this rival, kind of like Ralphie Parker in A Christmas Story. You got Scott Farkin. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yes.
And so when I was in school, my rival was a huge Georgia Tech fan. He wore his jersey, all this crap. So when Tech won three in a row, it was nightmares. It was just terrible, and it made me hate Tech with a passion. That's why, just a little backstory why I hate him so much, is because it was just during my developmental years, there was a lot there that caused me to hate Tech so just drastically. But to light it up, and I'm going to take a route I've never took on the show at all. You were talking about everybody being replaceable or irreplaceable and all this stuff coming and going. And it made me think about the Christmas season. You know, one time my father sat me down. I was working nonstop, grinding, which is a good thing. You want to have a good work ethic. You want to be a hard worker in life. You want to get things done. But I was grinding. I hadn't seen my kids as often as I did. Now, they live with me. I'm married, have a wife and all that. But I was just so busy grinding, trying to make money, trying to get stuff going. My dad sat me down and said, son, you know, jobs are replaceable. You're replaceable. All the stuff you're doing at this job, trying to get in good. Listen, if you left tomorrow, they find somebody to replace you. It's not going to make that big of a deal. But your family, that's the one that matters. You're irreplaceable when it comes to being a father and being there for your family. So I just wanted to drop in a little bit of wisdom and a little bit of encouragement. Everybody who's grinding right now, trying to work hard, make money for Christmas, do all this. You know, jobs are always replaceable. Materials are always replaceable. But the time you have with your family, the time you have with those that matter the most around you is irreplaceable, and you matter to somebody. Just try to keep your priorities straight this time of year and know that somebody views you as irreplaceable and you matter a whole lot. So just be encouraged and do all you can and be what you can for those around you.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate it, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, you too. That's good. Great advice right there. Great advice. Especially if you're a parent, you know. Like I tell Daniel all the time, one of my favorite things I get to do every morning is take my kid to school.
Yep.
Sometimes he's grumpy, sometimes he's not. Most of the time he's just funny or picking on me. But, oh, man.
I miss those days. You'll miss those when you don't have them anymore, when they're off to college and or driving themselves wherever. It's different when you don't have to do that anymore or get to do that anymore.
You know, our buddies at the Touchdown Club, I wasn't, you know, with him having his practices and rehearsals, you know, till 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. I think I made it to like one or two meetings this year. And I told him at the one I was at, I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. You know, it's just the kid. Hey, when he turns 16, you know, all this takes care of itself. And a lot of the dad, you know, dads there who had older kids were like, you're going to miss it. You'll miss. And then you got a whole another set of worries.
Yep.
You know, when they're out there driving. So.
Yeah, I definitely miss taking the boys to school. That was always fun when they were little. And, you know, it changes things for sure. So you'll miss it. So enjoy, like Josh said, you know, make sure you focus on your family first. Yep. That's the most important thing.
Yep. Man, I'm telling you, I'm reading more and more. There's a press conference about to start with the College Football Playoff Committee. Josh mentioned going to Georgia Southern games. I don't know if he remembers going to playoff games at Paulson Stadium, you know, and of course, you know, everybody knows who Tracy Ham is and Irk Russell and Adrian Peterson and those Paul Johnson teams and championships and all that stuff that was going on down there about 20 years ago. You know, if you were a fan of that team, if you're a fan of Georgia Southern, and been on those, made the trips and gone through those playoff runs, I mean, there's nothing like it. And that first set, I tell you, the thing I'm most excited about, and we can talk about, like, it brings more meaning to the conference championship weekend. It ends a lot of silly debates, and it just gives, you know, I want to live in a world where USC, Ohio State, and Alabama get a shot at it. You know, that's the world I've always wanted to live in. Let's not pick one of the three. Let's take all three and let them play each other. But the thing I'm most excited about is that first week when it's on campus, you know, and
it's gonna be amazing.
I like, you know, if you could only, I can't even imagine what it would be like if, what if Michigan was coming to Athens for a first round playoff game? I mean,
or Georgia was going to Michigan.
Either way, yeah. I mean, but I'm just, we were just, you know, we had that Tennessee game in Athens here in the state, and what a crazy weekend that was, and the build up and the anticipation, and we're thinking, oh, is this the biggest game in Sanford Stadium history? And you know, the Notre Dame game going back a few years ago was a big one. There's an LSU game, was it 2003, 2004, that was a big one. Like, I think a playoff game trumps all that because there's an inevitability to it. You know, it's the win or go home. There's no gray area. There's no, oh, well, we only lost by a field goal. Maybe we can still get in. I mean, it's right. It's win or go home.
Yeah.
And there's this, and that the drama that comes with that, it's unmatched. And you put that tension inside of a stadium that size, it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be unreal. And it's just the win or go home. And, you know, and the bowl game stuff is, it's nice. Like you said, if you've ever been to a bowl game, it's fun. But it doesn't have the same drama to it, and this is going to be drama filled.
Yeah,
and it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, it'll be great for the sport. 478-646 ESPN. Jim is in Kathleen. What's up, Jim?
Man, y'all are hitting it right on the head. I'm looking forward to the regular seasons in the years to come, where Alabama and Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, USC play each other, and you don't care if you lose that game early in the year, week three, because you could be a 2-3 loss team, and you played a heck of a schedule. The fans get what they're looking for. And if you're peaking late in the year because you lost a game early, you're not dead in the water. And hopefully you won't see this transfer portal blowing up or middle of the year, late in the year, because your team's out of it already. I love the NFL, even though regionally I don't have a team I really care about growing up from Alabama originally. I love the idea that you're in it to the end. And I think a 12-team playoff will keep so many more teams and fan bases interested, even if you've lost a game or two, because you went and played people. You're not worried about being undefeated or a one-loss team. You can go lose a game or two and be challenged early in the year, figure out who you are, and then make a run in the playoffs if you're in. So I want to see a 12-team playoff or maybe a 16 one day, because you can go play teams. Like,
yeah,
the FCS teams can go lose games out of conference. As long as they win their conference and win through, then they're in their playoff system.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that in college football, because I'm not an NFL guy, but it'll feel more like an NFL schedule one day, hopefully, because the big dogs will play each other in regular season.
No doubt. Hey, Jim, we appreciate the call. I think that's a great point, too, and one we haven't touched on. You know, the strength of schedule thing is going to come into play, and we see it in college basketball. Even if you don't win the game necessarily, like last night with the ACC Big Ten Challenge, it gave you Indiana and North Carolina. That's going to help both of those schools with their strength of schedule. And now, you know, if you do schedule four non-conference games that are tough, you know, you can lose one of those games. And you know, the other thing, too, is all these coaches and all these programs talking about they want to get their kids prepared for the National Football League. Well, nothing gets you more prepared for the NFL than that. There's no, like, you know, the Atlanta Falcons don't play Austin Peay before they play the Saints.
Right.
You know, we saw that this year from Alabama.
College football is the only sport,
right,
where you play a team that doesn't have the same roster.
Right.
Opportunities that you have.
Right. Could you imagine the Falcons playing a USFL team like in week three?
Right.
I mean, I would think a lot of that stuff goes away. Number one, because as Jim said, you don't have to feel like you need to go undefeated anymore. And you can get that weakness exposed and work on it and get better at it and have a season. That's what a season is. And then the other part of it, too, from the fan standpoint, you know, when they look, and I understand those FCS programs need those games, and maybe they can find other ways to make that happen. But, you know, the fans want marquee matchups.
They want competition. Competition. And what do college basketball coaches say all the time? We play good folks because it makes us better.
Yeah.
Makes us a better team.
Well, how many times do you see the high school team that's this time of year going into the playoffs and, okay, maybe they're 6-4, but they were 0-4 outside of the region because they played these powerhouses and 6-0 in the region because the coach knew playing that tough non-region schedule was going to have his boys ready for region play.
Or you see a team that's 10-0 and they've played nobody and then they get in the playoffs and they lose.
Gone in the first round, yep. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Frank Sulkowski, the big guy, WJCL, will join us. That and more as we continue right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Boy! 12:17, Russ and Daniel back with you here at Midday Sports Zone. Let's talk a little Georgia Southern football now. As we welcome in the big guy, Frank Sulkowski from WJCL in Savannah. Good afternoon, sir. Hope you're doing well.
Doing real well, Russ. How about yourself?
Doing great, man. Always appreciate the time. Well, it was a thrilling victory Saturday night, to say the least. Georgia Southern knocks off Appalachian State 51-48 in double overtime, and the fans rush the field. Frank, you were down there on the field at Paulson. Just take us inside that moment. What was that like?
Well, I tell you what, there was a lot of excitement, and I got to give credit to the crowd that was there for Georgia Southern. You know, we've always seen those post-Thanksgiving, those days right after Thanksgiving. Getting a crowd there is a little tough. Students have all gone home, and a lot of folks spending time with family and friends out of town. But Georgia Southern had, about 19, 20,000 people there in Paulson, and it was a loud crowd. And a lot of those folks spilled out onto the field after that touchdown pass that went to Ezra Archie. And again, if that name is not familiar to a lot of folks, there's probably a good reason why. Before the Appalachian State game, Archie had one catch for 4 yards this season as a Georgia Southern Eagle. So that was the theme. I think that's what made it even more exhilarating was, Georgia Southern was riding a losing streak. Bowl eligibility was on the line. Your biggest rival was across the field from you. And then it goes to double overtime. It was just an exciting one, and it will live in the lore of Georgia Southern football. Even though Georgia Southern, that was just win number 6. There's been bigger wins in program history, but that one maybe the one of the more exciting ones for the simple fact that Georgia Southern's back was against the wall. They were depleted, so many injuries. The Eagles, Clay Helton, had to dig deep into his depth chart and really call upon a lot of guys who. Let's go ahead and state the obvious. They, not well-known names. I mean, they were down the depth chart. We're talking about third, fourth, fifth stringers. We're talking about walk-ons that made an impact in that game. I mean, when you look at it, Georgia Southern, they had running backs Tyler Jordan and A.J. Brown, tight end Evan Lester, wide receiver Ezra Archie, all scoring their first Georgia Southern career touchdowns. In that game against Appalachian State. So those guys play in huge parts. And I think the fans who have been around it and Stanford, they really appreciated it. And it was pretty exciting down there on the field.
Frank, what does that say about this team after everything they've been through and all those injuries, that they're able to get those kinds of contributions? That's got to be really gratifying for this coaching staff.
Oh, it does. I mean, it really does. And again, this coaching staff who, Clay Helton, his staff come in, these aren't necessarily their players. They're the guys they inherited. And again, I think what that says is, as a program as a whole, there's been a buy-in and, the next man up mentality and play your role, play your part when your number's called. We saw all that play out against Appalachian State. Defense with a couple fourth down stops, even though they gave up a lot of yards and a lot of points, they came up with some clutch stops and played well at moments in that game. The offense took advantage, scored points. I mean, let's be honest. This is a Georgia Southern offense that was without the top two running backs. They've lost pretty much three of their leading receivers as the season has kind of gone along. The only thing that's really been the same from start to finish for the offense has been the offensive line, and they've avoided the injury bug there. And also quarterback Kyle Van Trees, you can't say enough about that guy who came in here, which will be his only season in Statesboro. And he's become a little bit of a legend there, you know, transferring in from Buffalo with 1 year eligibility, breaking records at Georgia Southern. And today he was named third team all conference in the Sun Belt. And again, you know, while it wasn't like a huge year or undefeated season, I think Georgia Southern Eagle Nation at 6-6 have got to be feeling very excited about the future with Clay Helton and the, what he's building there in Statesboro. Again, this is a team that won three games last year. This is a team that, you know, a lot of people, including Vegas, were predicting them to win, you know, 3-4 games this year. They go out there, they win six games, they knock off a top 25 opponent, they beat their biggest rival. Oh, they also have a win over a Power 5 team in Nebraska, and now they're going back to a bowl game. So while you didn't win the Sun Belt Conference, you still checked off a lot of the goals that every team has entering a season.
Frank, you mentioned the year Kyle Van Trees has had, and when you look ahead, you know, whether it's talking to kids at the high school level or maybe some quarterbacks in the transfer portal, I mean, what Kyle did for this team, he's made this a very attractive place for quarterbacks to want to come play, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, he definitely has. I mean, because if there were any questions, you know, for players around the country, whether that's high school or someone in the portal or at another college about what Georgia Southern is going to be doing moving forward, what we saw is running backs, if you're one of the guys, you're going to get carries. Receivers, you're going to get your targets. Quarterbacks, you're going to get a chance to put up some big numbers and to play in a system that's going to get you looked at for the NFL and professional football and beyond. I mean, again, Georgia Southern has done a 180 where, you know, we've seen so many running quarterbacks over the years. But Kyle Van Trees comes in and is asked to do a lot of things and to be that on-the-field general, and he was that in year one. So now imagine, you know, these quarterbacks entering the portal and they're seeing a guy who in one season, you know, coming from Buffalo comes over and boom, you know, he's throwing for 4,000 yards and touchdowns and is on ESPN and is getting his team to a bowl game. And that's going to be exciting. And I think it's only going to help recruiting moving forward. And it would not surprise me if we don't see, you know, a couple more guys from that transfer portal come in and try to be in the mix for the starting job for next year and moving forward.
Frank, what about the other positions? I mean, it feels like they did a good job in the portal all over. You think they'll be busy again in that this year?
Well, I think you look just this week alone, so many guys have gone into the transfer portal. And again, I think what you're going to see Clay Helton and his staff do is have that good mix, because you can't rely all on the portal because those guys have limited eligibility. A lot of those guys coming in with 2 or 1 year eligibility. Sometimes you get a guy who has 3 years eligibility. And then you also got to watch those guys who have jumped around a couple times and then they have to sit out and you got to start questioning, well, they're moving around all over the place. I think you're going to see Georgia Southern go into that portal and they're going to, you know, for a couple key positions. I think you're going to look offensive line because Georgia Southern, you know, is a veteran offensive line. So they're going to be looking to fill some holes there. I think you're going to look for, into that portal for your quarterback, because I don't necessarily think that one of the guys that's on roster right now has emerged as the can't miss guy. I think there are guys who can be the starting quarterback at Georgia Southern, but you got to have that healthy competition. And I think you're going to look at them, especially to shore up the defensive side of the ball. We've seen it, especially there in the box. I think the defensive line can use a couple grown men who have a little bit of experience. I think that linebacking core needs some help immediately as they develop some of those younger guys as well. So I think a couple key positions to look out for what Helton and them will dip in that portal: quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker. That's really where I think they're going to go shopping a little bit there and there. But again, what we've seen is you got to get those younger guys too. So I think he's going to go heavy here in the Southeast with those high school guys. And we've seen, Helton and his staff offering scholarships already because he's got to have that homegrown talent as well. We have a lot of commitments already. And I think when all is said and done, Georgia Southern will have a top two recruiting class in the Sun Belt Conference. A lot of folks are going to start drinking this this Helton Kool-Aid that he's brewing over there in Statesboro.
It tastes really good. I strongly encourage it, that's for sure. Hey, Frank, we won't be looking in the portal for a 12:15 guest on Thursday. I can promise you that.
Sounds good, yeah. I'm not going anywhere. The knees don't hold up. And I tell you what, the good thing is Georgia Southern going to a bowl game. We'll find out for sure this weekend. So Georgia Southern going to continue to be able to develop some of those young guys, more practices, more time with the coaches, and a reward for those upperclassmen that have been through so much. Georgia Southern going to play one more time. And, again, after the last game against Appalachian State, this team isn't rolling over. This team may be banged up, but they're going to give it their all. And it would not surprise me to see Georgia Southern go to a bowl game and pick up win number 7 and really set the table for a 2023 season, which could be pretty magical.
No doubt. Hey, man, we always appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys, you too.
We'll do it. That's Frank Sulkowski, WJCL in Savannah, talking a little Georgia Southern football. It's amazing to me how, for your program, especially when you have a first-year head coach or maybe even a second-year head coach, if you end the season with a win over your rival, it doesn't necessarily change the tone, but, man, it just takes it to another level.
It changes. I think it can change the tone, and it can change the – believe me, I'm feeling the other way. I think Clemson's had a pretty good year, bounced back pretty good, and in the way they played Saturday, I have no confidence they're going to win this Sunday or win a bowl game or – whatever. Hell, fire everybody other than Dabo. I mean,
clean house.
A clean house, my friend. But no, I mean, it changes. When you win that game, and especially for a team like Georgia Southern, you win that game and it gets you another game.
Yeah.
With a new head coach and a new staff, I think it certainly can change how you look at this season. Because if you lose that game, you're 5-7, you're done for the year. You're already recruiting.
Oh, yeah.
In the portal.
The tone of that whole conversation with Frank is completely different.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's and look, only time will tell, but it's one of those wins that it's not necessarily a signature win per se, but 3 or 4 years down the road, you could look back and say, that's kind of what ignited it.
That's where it started.
Yeah.
Right. You can point to – when you look back on something, you can say, okay, that's where it started. Like, I think Georgia – you can look back on that Notre Dame game.
Absolutely, in South Bend.
And I know that they lost the championship game that year, but that you can point to that game and say, this program's different now.
Yep, 100%. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, it's David Hill of ESPN.com. That and more as we continue right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
Russ Brown and Daniel Shirley with you here. Told you we'd come up with something. Only the losers. Tom Petty, requested by David Hill this week. He joins us home. What do you want to say?
I was just going to ask David if he's taking a shot at us or something in that song. I don't know what's going on.
Let's just say that it has levels. There's many layers to the way that could be applied today.
There you go.
Thanks for taking some time out for us losers. We really do appreciate it. David, the college football playoff expansion, it's going to happen now. They've had their big press conference and big announcement. I mean, I don't know about you, but this just feels like a big win for college football fans, doesn't it?
I think so. I mean, there's no panacea here. There's no perfect formula that's going to make everybody happy. But I think this gets us closer to where we want to be for a number of reasons. I think, look, first of all, we're going into this weekend, and I think you can make a very valid case that every game that's being played Saturday does not matter. Like, I think there's a chance that if Utah beats USC again, that Ohio State would slip into the playoff instead of USC. But the other three are pretty much win or lose, they're into the playoff. So that's a problem in its own right. I think it's a problem that, you know, if USC does miss the playoff this year, we're looking at, you know, seven straight years, I guess it is, that the no team west of Texas has made the playoff. That's a problem. I think it's a problem that we spend so much time arguing endlessly over stuff that is just either utterly irrelevant to a team's quality or just mind-numbingly stupid in its own right. And I think by giving automatic qualifiers to conferences, you start to eliminate some of that while still keeping, you know, look, as I've said all along, the anger and outrage and debate is not a flaw. It is a tool of the system. They are happy that you're doing this. And we're still keeping that, but without the, I think, constant overreactions to this is how good a conference is, or, you know, how much less bad is your loss than my loss. Like, to me, I think those are the types of conversations I'd like to have a lot fewer of, and I think this gets us closer to that, too.
David, specifically about Alabama, do you think they're out?
Yes, I think they are probably out. I think the way that they get in, if they do, right now Georgia and Michigan are in, period. USC may need to win to get in, and if they don't, then they've, you know, Alabama's got a shot. But I think it's clear from the rankings that Ohio State is going to get the first shot. Let's say TCU plays Kansas State and gets their doors blown off, and USC plays Utah and they get beat pretty bad too. Now you're talking about an opportunity in which Alabama can say, like, look, we've got two losses. USC's got two losses. Our two losses are by a combined 4 points, the teams that you had in the top 10. USC has lost to the same team twice. Like, there's a case, I guess. I don't buy the case. I don't think the committee is going to buy the case. And I almost wonder if Alabama's pedigree works against them here, because to take them in any sort of a, like, splitting hairs scenario is going to work against the committee in terms of people just saying, like, oh, there they go, giving Alabama the benefit of the doubt again on a year they didn't deserve it. And I don't think those criticisms would be wrong at all. So I just think if anybody's sneaking in, it's probably Ohio State. I truly kind of hope that doesn't happen, not because I don't think Ohio State is good, but look, we've seen them play Michigan. I don't need another rematch in the playoff. I think I would love to see some teams that are stylistically different, which TCU and USC certainly give. So, you know, I think we're probably as set on the top four with a potential fifth as we can get. I would be shocked if there is a real pathway for anyone else.
David, just jumping ahead a little bit here to the college football playoff, who has the best chance to beat Georgia? Because it just feels like it's Georgia or the field right now.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the game that Georgia played against Michigan last year, and I don't know that that's apples to apples comparison because both teams have changed. But, you know, Georgia lost some guys on defense, but they're still really, really good. Michigan lost two terrific edge rushers, which is probably their, you know, the heart and soul of what they did. They're still very, very good. They probably are better at quarterback than they were, but that wasn't a close game last year. So it would be really hard for me to say Michigan is the one who topples Georgia at this point. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I would say it's unlikely. You know, if TCU's in, look, they're a wild card, but I think and absolutely deserving of being in, and I think because stylistically they are so different from what Michigan and Georgia do and are used to seeing, that it gives them a real chance. But, I mean, look, talent for talent, I just don't see it. You know, again, you never say never, but there's, you know, Bud Elliott from 247 CBS has long since had his blue chip index, which basically says, like, if more than half your roster is not blue chip recruits, you're not going to win a national championship. And that has always held true. And TCU does not hit that mark. So then you say, who else could do it? Well, if Ohio State got in, I think they're certainly capable. I didn't watch that Ohio State-Michigan game and say Ohio State never had a chance to win. They absolutely did. They ended up folding in the second half, but they had a chance to win. And I think because of the talent on that roster, they would have a shot. But USC is the one that's really intriguing to me, and I'll tell you why. You watch that Notre Dame game in Week 13, and while Notre Dame was able to move the football a little bit, and certainly Drew Pine completed a lot of passes, and Michael Mayer ended up with 2 touchdowns at the end of the day, Notre Dame was never really in that game. That was USC handled that game. And they're a flawed team, particularly on defense, without question. But what Notre Dame does, to me, is sort of like the light beer version of what Georgia and Michigan do. They're run heavy, they're defense first, they're very physical. You know, Notre Dame is a talented team, but they're not very dynamic. And that is sort of the case with Georgia's offense, which they've got Brock Bowers, but aside from that, they don't have a receiver who's really going to challenge you down the field. And Michigan, who, you know, that Ohio State game is the first time all year we've really seen their passing game look explosive. So if USC can drag either of those teams into something akin to a shootout, and they can do to them 80% of what they did to Notre Dame, USC can win those games. So I think it's maybe a little more wide open than a lot of people are giving credit for. I would 100% have Georgia as the favorite right now. But I think there's that, especially if Georgia gets the 1 seed and USC gets the 4, that's a more intriguing 1-4 matchup than we've had in a while.
David, the coaching carousel's kind of slowly filling these spots. What have you thought of the hire so far? And then maybe specifically, what do you think about Georgia Tech?
Yeah. Well, first of all, with Matt Rhule and with Luke Fickell, I mean, those are, I think, home run hires. That's not a guarantee they work out. But I think both of those, Nebraska and Wisconsin, got the guys that they absolutely should have wanted. Now, Nebraska got that guy the last time around, too, and didn't work out so well. So, again, no guarantees. Auburn, the less we talk about Hugh Freeze, probably the better for FCC regulation reasons. I think that's a real stretch. I mean, you are essentially saying, screw PR, we just think we can win football games with this guy, and I'm not sure that's 100% guaranteed. Georgia Tech's an interesting one to me because you heard other names involved, and we mentioned last week Bill O'Brien, which I think anything is better than that. Frankly, Willie Fritz's name was thrown out there, and I thought that would have been a terrific hire. Willie Fritz is sort of like the coach's coach, the guy that every other coach in America truly respects and likes, and I think it would have been a good one. But I don't have a problem with sticking with Brent Key because he knows where you're starting from, right? And he has his own ideas, and he's clearly shown he can get this team to be competitive. My concern is that you allowed a 4-3 stretch over 7 games in a season that was already pretty well lost to define what you think the future is. And it's cool if the future is Brent Key. Like, I get that. It can be, and I'm not saying that that can't be successful. But it had the feeling of a, like, well, you know, we don't have an obviously better alternative right now, so let's just keep this guy around. And I don't want to see Georgia Tech essentially punt the ball for 2 more seasons of a guy who isn't going to be able to transform that program from what it is to where it needs to be. So I'll be interested to kind of see, you know, what Brent Key has done has been impressive, but what he's also done is like, I got to work with what I've got to try to get the most out of it. And he's good at that, clearly. But how is he going to be at building a vision for a program, big picture and long term? That we still don't quite know yet, and I'll be very interested to sort of hear how he wants to approach those conversations over the next few months, because I think, you know, a lot of that is going to be, you know, up in the air. We don't know. He doesn't have a track record. We haven't seen him have to go out and put a recruiting class together. You know, frankly, I think all of this is, you know, are you asking for 10% better or 20% better than what you had? Because I don't think that's going to be good enough for Georgia Tech. They need a fresh approach to this. So I'll be very interested to see whether he's bringing that.
Good stuff. Hey, David, we always appreciate the time, man. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. That's David Hill with ESPN.com. We'll go ahead and take a break. And as we do, we'll open up the phone lines, 478-646-ESPN. That and more as we continue right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
12:48, Russ and Daniel back with you here, wrapping it up on this Thursday afternoon. Man, I tell you, we were talking with David Hill last segment about the 12-team playoff, and it just, I think it universally, it's just, well, and maybe for different reasons in different little sectors, but, you know, for all the time we spent banging on the College Football Playoff Committee and some of their rankings that just seem odd, I they nailed this. I mean, the more you think about it, the more you look at it, they really accomplished a lot of things. You know, when you have a year where, you know, like with the SEC, you've got a year where there might be three teams in the conference that are good enough to win a championship. There's room for all of those teams to get in there. When you have a team like the Tulane Green Wave that have had the kind of season they've had in the American that just kind of came out of nowhere, you know, there's room for them too. Yep. You know, there's room for a team like LSU that, with a first-year head coach, maybe gets off to a little bit of a slow start. I know they lost to Texas A&M, but let's just pretend like they didn't for a second. They get off to a little bit of a slow start, but kind of find themselves in October. And it's the hot team at the end. Well, you know what? There's room for them, too. And that's the way it should be. You know, I like to see the competition. I like to see that. I like to, you know, what can, you know, a TCU or you know, a team like that that hasn't really been here lately, what can they do against a perennial power like a Georgia? I mean, most people think Georgia would kill TCU, and they very well may. But let's let it happen on the field. You know, let's not leave somebody home because of what we think might happen, because that's not always what happens.
How long have we talked about this, Russ, and said it's not right that 70 college football teams enter the season with zero chance to win a national title? And that's what it's been until Cincinnati last year. Cincinnati kind of changed things a little bit. But look what had to go right for Cincinnati to get in. Everything. Everything had to go right. Now, every team will start the season with a path to win the championship. Is it realistic for most of them? No. It's not. It's but college basketball. Every team that in Division One, 370 schools now, starts the season and can win a national title.
Right.
And now that will happen in football.
It will. If you know, Tulane is the highest ranked, and Bill Hancock was asked about if we would still use the term Group of Five moving forward. He said he doesn't like to use it now.
Right.
And I've asked that about the Big 12. You know, what do we still call that? The Group of Five, and the ACC and the Pac-12 clearly not on the same level as the SEC and the Big Ten. Do we say Power Two or what? I think that's just going to go
stuff
away.
Just goes away.
It'll be like basketball.
Yep.
But Tulane is the highest ranked, and we'll just use the term now just for clarification, is that highest ranked Group of Five, or to use the new college football playoff terms, they would be the sixth highest ranked conference champion. That's who gets the first six spots. Well, Tulane's 10-2. And they still got a game to play on Saturday. So if you're in the Sun Belt or if you're in the MAC or Conference USA or the Mountain West, you have a path, because if you come through those conferences and you're undefeated, or maybe you have one loss, there's a really good chance you would be ranked ahead of Tulane right now.
Yeah, no doubt.
So it really opens it up for everybody. And that'll be – and that's just the way it should be.
I love when people say Group of Five for basketball. There's no such thing. Now, people do say mid-major. Maybe that's what we'll go with. We'll go with mid-majors and high majors. I don't know. But Group of Five is not a thing in basketball. It's not. It just doesn't exist. So I'm hoping that goes away for football, too. This Power Five, Group of Five. And, Russ, hopefully it'll slow down some of the super conference stuff, too. Like, if you're the ACC, or if you're in the ACC, and if they can get their television deal figured out, what's the bonus of going to the SEC or going to the Big Ten? Or, you know, like, I mean, right, if they can get their money close to that, to those other conferences, if you want a competitive angle, why wouldn't you stay in the ACC? Why wouldn't you stay in the Big 12?
Well, I think they're, I think that's going to apply more to coaches than schools.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, at every school there's this, I'm using the word stuff, you have to deal with. But sometimes at bigger schools, there's more of it. And there are guys out there that just want to coach football. You'll find a lot of them coaching FCS football.
Right.
Because they just want to coach football.
They don't want to deal with the other stuff.
And you know, six-figure salary is just fine with them, and they just, you know, X's and O's and prepping teams and film study and practice. And, you know, I'll go talk to the two hometown reporters for about 10 minutes after practice, and that, and I'm going home. You know, there's a level of that now. There's like a, there's a layer sort of between the top and that FCS now, where there is a little bit more, you know, responsibility, and there is, sure, a little bit more the old rubber chicken circuit, as they like to call it, but it's not the same as it is at the highest levels. And you have a path to a playoff and a path to compete and try to win championships.
Like, if, and we see it in basketball some, you know, like a guy like Mark Few. He didn't jump to UCLA. He didn't jump to whatever. He stayed at Gonzaga. Will we start to see a Luke Fickell stay at Cincinnati more? Or now it's going to come down to money. Like you said, it's going to come down to, it's definitely going to come down to money. And those Big 12 or Big 10 and SEC schools can pay more than the other three conferences can, or the other, I guess you probably should say, those two can pay more than the other eight conferences can, because there is a gap between those two and everybody else. So maybe that is the, is the, it is the deal moving forward. But I just think if you want to win a national title and you're at Eastern Michigan, now you can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can dream anyway.
Sure.
You're not going to,
you couldn't dream
out
before.
And it's still, and you know, the brands, the teams at the top are probably still going to dominate the college football playoff, but sure, at least there'll be a little bit of entertainment until we get there.
Right. They do it in basketball.
We're out of time. Thanks for listening as always. Appreciate Bryce Kuhn, Frank Sulkowski, and David Hale for jumping in here with us. Thank you for listening as always. For Daniel, I'm Russ. We'll do it again tomorrow. Y'all have a good one.